Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, we wish we could tell folks there was a good martini today, but we just can't. So we're going to have bad, probably crazy as well, and then also crazy martinis today. So let's just dive right into the not good news today and start with the bad martini. This is from Politico, and it deals with what's probably on your cable news channel for much of the day, and that's the confirmation hearing for CIA director turned Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo. Politico: Mike Pompeo won't have his Senate confirmation hearing until Thursday. This was written yesterday. But the Republican National Committee has already launched a pressure campaign aimed at coaxing politically vulnerable red state senators to support his nomination for Secretary of State. Pompeo won votes from 15 Senate Democrat caucus members last year for his nomination to be CIA director, giving the GOP hope of winning at least a handful of Democratic votes for President Donald Trump's bid to move him to the State Department. Pompeo will need Democratic buy-in to clear the narrowly divided Senate, given that Senator Rand Paul plans to oppose his nomination. With an eye to swaying swing votes, the RNC plans to dispatch surrogates on TV and radio in red states, where incumbent moderate Democrats previously backed Pompeo to lead the CIA, according to a copy of its plans shared with Politico. So, Jim, he got 66 votes, so it's kind of ridiculous. I don't think there's anything in his record at CIA that would suggest that he's suddenly now unqualified for this job. I would probably argue the Rand Paul objection on enhanced interrogation doesn't really apply that much to the new job that he's going for. But the fact that we're this bitterly divided, not just in numbers, but in ideology, that Mike Pompeo's nomination is in serious jeopardy because of Rand Paul and the health of John McCain, this is not a good moment for Republicans or for the Senate right now.
I would argue for the country, Craig.
Yes.
Because, look, you know, first of all, I have a very tough time believing that Mike Pompeo is not qualified. He obviously spent only a little bit more than a year as CIA director, but it seems like the organization was running pretty smoothly, or at least to the extent that things come out of the CIA during the past year or so. He's been establishing ties with his foreign counterparts. Diplomacy is a part of the job for the CIA director. Before then, he was on the House Intelligence Committee and widely respected by his peers. And I periodically point out, look, we've got Ben Carson running HUD, right? He wanted to make Jared Kushner his chief of staff at one point, allegedly. Steve Bannon, who was running Breitbart, was the senior. You know, like when the Senate gets a Trump nominee who is qualified and good for the job, you vote yes, right? I want as many comp. If you don't like the, if you don't have the president, great. Maybe you think he doesn't need anybody around him. You can make the U.S. government a one-man show. But presuming you don't like this president or you have doubts about him or something like that, you're a Senate Democrat, then you want to have as many competent people around the president as possible. And what's more, like you're waiting for a Secretary of State nominee you're going to like. You're not going to get one from President Trump, right? You are a Democrat. You see the world differently than President Trump does. Mike Pompeo is probably as good as it's going to get. I think there's actually a very strong case to be made. He's a much stronger pick than Rex Tillerson. If you wanted to argue that the former CEO of Exxon was not properly qualified to be Secretary of State, you could make that argument. And in fact, I think Tillerson's record kind of indicates that he was a poor fit for the job. But, you know, if you've got somebody who could do this job and do it relatively well, you know, at a time when we've got, we're supposed to go into a summit with North Korea in a month or so. Obviously, there's, continuing rumors are on the verge of military action in Syria. This is still a very dangerous world. And you want, and as far as I heard from the hearing this morning, Greg, Pompeo is out there saying everything a Democratic senator should want to say. He wants to fill in all the gaps of staffing. He wants to staff them up. He wants to improve the quality. He understands the problems with morale at the State Department. Look, as I understand it, the State Department employees themselves are looking at Pompeo with a certain amount of optimism. Because if nothing else, they have a potential boss who knows how to talk to the president and knows how to persuade him, who basically was doing the presidential daily briefing every morning. He's got a pre-existing relationship. Trump likes him and listens to him. And thus, if you're in the State Department, that's what you want in a secretary. So the idea that Democrats are going to torpedo, well, then great. We're just not going to have a Secretary of State for the next couple of months. Until they find another one. And if you're all going to follow the Kirsten Gillibrand approach where I don't like this president, so I will vote against every nominee, in order to make some sort of point. But in the process, the president doesn't get a cabinet, even choices that are good ones. So it is a potentially catastrophic philosophy being exhibited by Senate Democrats here. And I think it's safe to assume that you're going to see tit for tat. If Senate Democrats vote as a bloc to block all of the president's cabinet choices, you're going to see Republicans do the same in the future. And it's going to get even harder to get, you know, just the basic tasks of government done with functioning qualified staff because somebody wants to prove a point and or they want to compete in the Democratic primary in a couple of years.
So if Rand Paul and John McCain are out on this, you're looking at a max of 49 Republicans, which means you need one Democrat and then Mike Pence to get over the top here. Hopefully it's more Democrats than that. But you got to think a Joe Manchin or a Joe Donnelly or a Heitkamp's going to come through here, right? I mean, this would be probably much more harmful to them come November than trying to rally their Democratic base on this.
Yeah, there are a bunch of new ratings or approval ratings for senators out. Heidi Heitkamp has a reason to worry. Manchin was doing a little bit better. You figure they would. But again, like these guys should be Pompeo, Gaspel, you know, these are folks who should be getting, I'd like to see them getting approved 90 to 10 or something like that. It shouldn't be 52-48 or something like that in order to get a qualified figure in a position like Secretary of State. Like this isn't like, you know, pick random federal agency here that could operate with an acting director for long stretches, right? I mean, it'd be nice to have a Secretary of State on the job. And, you know, apparently Senate Democrats disagree, Greg, or at least most of them do.
Yeah, I guess so. I was thinking there might be a little bit of a Merrick Garland effect here. Obviously, Trump will still be president next year, but if the Democrats think they can win the Senate, which is an uphill climb compared to their efforts in the House, they could potentially, and get the majority, they could potentially force a nominee more to their liking. But I think you're right. I think it literally is just a factor of many people simply refusing to support anybody nominated by this president. So let's move on to our bad and crazy. If that wasn't depressing enough, let's move to this, courtesy of the New York Times. For 7 decades, Never Forget has been a rallying cry of the Holocaust remembrance movement. But a survey released Thursday on Holocaust Remembrance Day found that many adults lack basic knowledge of what happened. And this lack of knowledge is more pronounced among millennials, whom the survey defined as people ages 18 to 34. 31% of Americans and 41% of millennials believe that 2 million or fewer Jews were killed in the Holocaust. The actual number, of course, is around 6 million. 41% of Americans and 66% of millennials cannot say what Auschwitz was. Only 39% of Americans know that Hitler was democratically elected. And so the explanation here is that, quote, as we get farther away from the actual events, 70 plus years now, it becomes less of a forefront of what people are talking about or thinking about or discussing or learning. Jim, you and I were born obviously well after that. We learned this stuff. It was common knowledge at one time. You could possibly blame education systems for prioritizing and spending much more time on things other than this, so people don't know basic history either of the United States or major world events such as this. But the idea that's because something happened, you know, 70 years ago is the reason that people are failing to know the very basics about it, I don't think that really washes too well. It's either that people don't care or they never learned it in the first place.
Yeah, every once in a while, Greg, I start thinking I'm getting too cynical about the American people, that I'm too cynical about millennials. I'm just getting old and crotchety in my old age, and you know, I should give people more credit. And then a poll result like this comes along and basically says, nope, people are as bad as you think they are. Now, I don't know about you, Greg. I remember reading, I think it was, you know, Diary of Anne Frank, I want to say in eighth grade. And, you know, the Holocaust was part of the curriculum, certainly by high schools. I understand there's a wariness to introduce these concepts and very disturbing images and things like that to kids at a particularly young age. But you figure by high school, this should be in there. And it's kind of baffling. And, you know, little stuff like if you get the number of people killed, okay, I guess I can, give a little bit of slack on that. Not knowing Hitler was democratically elected. I mean, like, the capital letters underline cautionary tale about this, and it's not apparently it hasn't been absorbed by a significant number of people. But not knowing Auschwitz, that's the one where you're like, come on, right. Come on, you know, like of all the, you know, films made, books written, I hope everyone will forgive me for this reference, Greg, don't these people watch the X-Men movies? Right, I mean, you know, some people find it tasteless, but it was always part of the comic book characterization. You know, Magneto the villain, His family was killed in the Holocaust, and that's why he's such an extremist. He's constantly afraid that if he doesn't let up, then he and his people, or you know, in this case, you know, superpowered mutants, will be exterminated. And whether you find that to be a juvenile way of dealing with real world historical atrocities, or whether you find that an interesting way to kind of introduce these concepts to a younger audience, you know, it's there. Like the idea that this number of people have no idea what it is just baffling and horrifying and creepy. And, you know, it's one of those days, Greg, when the crazy martini is like the most lighthearted of our bad martinis. So let's just get on to that.
Yes, yes. I would also encourage millennials the next time they're drawing their Trump equals Hitler poster boards for whatever rally is next, that they might actually want to study Hitler. I just assume they knew what he did and then were exaggerating the threat posed by Trump or Bush 8 years ago, because they made that comparison to him as well. And there were some who made the comparison to Obama. Learn it. Understand why that comparison is extreme. All right, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And Jim, the Republican National Committee is in full operation. We talked about how they were trying to make sure that Democrats were put on the spot in terms of the confirmation vote on Mike Pompeo. There's also a rapid response effort to deal with the emerging public relations campaign from former FBI Director James Comey and his new book, A Higher Loyalty. But as you point out today, this plan from the RNC could use a little tweaking, or it could just be crumpled up and thrown in the trash can. Quote, the battle plan against Comey, obtained by CNN, calls for branding the nation's former top law enforcement official as Lion Comey through a website, digital advertising, and talking points to be sent to Republicans across the country before his memoir is released next week. The White House signed off on the plan, which is being overseen by the Republican National Committee. Quote, Comey isn't credible. Just ask the Democrats. The digital ads will show several Democrats calling for Comey's resignation after he injected himself into the 2016 presidential race, including House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer, and Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California, who has shown saying, all I can tell you is the FBI director has no credibility. And Jim, we talked about just a couple days ago why the new PR slick martyr James Comey is turning stomachs for former FBI agents. But the idea of making your case against James Comey is by extolling the wisdom and virtues of Maxine Waters seems a little bit short-sighted.
I was just about to say, if Maxine Waters says it, it has to be true. you can raise, by the first, we can begin with a fair question of, you know, is it the job of the Republican National Committee to go out and try to kneecap a former director of the FBI as he comes out with his autobiography and writes and says things that are critical of the president? Some people will say yes, some people will say no. Obviously, the RNC believes that the Republican Party's political fortunes are tied to President Trump. Therefore, if you're a critic of President Trump, you must be attacked, and they should do it. And, you know, look, people have been reading National Review know I wrote my big piece talking to former FBI agents, and there was no shortage of statements from them saying they don't like the book, they don't like Comey being a more outspoken political celebrity, they don't like the idea that the FBI director, our former FBI director, becoming, quote-unquote, you know, one of the faces of the resistance. There's a lot of fair room to criticize Comey. By the way, Greg, what does it say that we're, you know, calling him Lion Comey? Are we just, have we reached the point we've run out of negative adjectives in Trump's vocabulary? I thought it was Lion Ted.
It was,
right?
Lion Ted,
you,
yeah.
And Cruddy Comey. You can think of all kinds of a litter of ones that could have gone with that. I think, you know, narcissistic egomaniac would be the theme I would go with if we're going to attack Comey. Or something, you know, loves the spotlight, preening, you know, there's room there. Is he lying? Look, we know that he is engaged in, he leaked his memo to a Columbia professor friend, and that's a no-no. That no doubt was a violation of his oath to not disclose things like that without permission. Now, obviously, the traditional punishment for actions like that, Greg, is firing, and you can't fire Comey twice. But, you know, look, there's really legitimate room to criticize James Comey. Saying, look what Maxine Waters said about him does not strike me as a particularly effective line with that. Because, one, you know, the Republicans aren't going to be persuaded by that. I don't think independents are persuaded by it either. And all the Democrats aren't going to say, oh, Maxine Waters says, you know, you can't trust Comey. Well, I guess his criticism of Trump isn't plausible. That, you know, I don't understand who this is aimed at. You know, if you're going to say, oh, look, Schumer and Pelosi and Maxine Waters are hypocrites, film at 11. I mean, we're all kind of used to them being giant hypocrites. And people could turn around and say, hey, you know, Comey made critical comments of Hillary and Trump and you know, lots of other Republicans had no problem quoting stuff like that. So, look, if you're going to attack Comey on the merits, attack him on that. Don't rely on proxies of you know, like Maxine Waters and stuff like that. So just, it seems, I don't know about you, Greg, it seems thrown together at the last minute, not particularly persuasive, and just a substandard effort from the RNC. And if you ever thought you'd see Maxine Waters approvingly quoted in an RNC ad, well, aren't you lucky to be alive, huh, Greg?
Oh, man, I think your first point is the most instinctively correct here, and that's that why are we even having this campaign? I think if you look back at the Fire and Fury book, that thing got way more oxygen because of the huge blowback coming from Trump's Twitter account and other people, and ultimately, if they had just left it alone, it probably would have been not as much hype, although it would have gotten quite a bit still, and then perhaps some of the ridiculous aspects of the book perhaps would have been discovered sooner instead of the press cheerleading against the president. So on the other hand, if you love what Maxine Waters says, then you end up getting left on the hook for other things she says. And I'm pretty sure she's wanted Trump impeached since before he even got sworn in. So I'm guessing the RNC doesn't agree with that.
And I would point out, like, the folks who I spoke to in my article, look, I only got to like half the retired FBI agents that I could. There were other ones who never got back to me and things like that. It's not that hard to find retired FBI agents who have critical things to say about James Comey. So my guess is that at least some of them would be willing to say them on camera. And if you really want to go after James Comey, and by the way, I think you're absolutely right. I'm not sure this might be one of those things where the benefit is not worth the effort on the part of the RNC. Go out and do a Swift Boat Vets for Truth type ad against him, right? You know, don't rely on Democratic lawmakers. And I think the strongest argument to be made about Comey, and I think the fairest one, is that by becoming such an outspoken and high profile critic of the president, he appears to be politicizing the agency. Now, I used to joke for a long time, Greg, in New Jersey politics, the Democrats saw the FBI as the opposition party, not the Republicans, because if a Democratic incumbent was not going to be returning to office, it was more likely to come because of the actions of the FBI than the actions of New Jersey Republicans. But the FBI is not supposed to be partisan. They don't want to be seen as favoring one side or the other. I've heard people describing that it was culturally a conservative and more right of center organization, law and order types. But on the other hand, I think you can look at the Andrew McCabe's of the world and say, actually, there's probably a diversity of views within the Bureau. And that's the way it ought to be. You don't want the a partisan or politicized Department of Justice or you know, FBI agents or things like that. So that's the strongest argument against Comey. Not this, you can't believe him because he's criticizing the president. Because, you know, look, what are the odds of, you know, Donald Trump raging and fuming or behaving in a expecting law enforcement to be his own personal team of guys to go after people? What are the odds of that, right, Greg?
Oh, what a day. We might not have enough votes to confirm Mike Pompeo. 2/3 of millennials don't know what Auschwitz is, and Republicans are glowingly quoting Maxine Waters. Typical Thursday in Washington.
Thank God it's Friday, Greg.
Almost. We're almost there. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. And tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.